Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We commence today's shiur with the Mishnah that's found at the very bottom of Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis. The Elu Dvorim She'ein Chayovim Aleim Mishum Pigol. The Mishnah now will present a list of items that if one were to have an incorrect thought while offering these items, an incorrect thought meaning out of time or out of place, these items that are featured in the Mishnah would not be labeled pigol. And the rule that's given for this to explain these is that a pigol settles upon or affects that which has something that is matir them, something that enables them to become allowed, either allowed for the altar or allowed for human consumption. However, the vehicle that causes something to be allowed, that itself, maybe you'll say ironically, that itself does not become pigol. And the list continues, or starts. Hakoimetz, if someone were to take a handful of a mincha, a meal offering, and while he's taking the handful from the base, from the bowl that contains the mincha, and he takes the handful with the intention of eating the shirayim, that which remains after the handful which is taken and eventually put on the mizbeach, and he has an intention to eat the shirayim, the remaining material, the next day, which is a pigol machshava, that handful itself does not become pigol. Pigol, using the expression that you find in the halacha, pigol is chal only on something that has matirim. What else? V'hakteres, v'halavona. The keteres is the daily incense offering. The lavona is a type of incense that accompanies mincha offerings. U'minchas kehanim. A minchas kohanim is a mincha that's brought by a kohen. The halacha with regard to a kohen who brings a mincha, a kemitza is not done from them, but rather the entire mincha, a handful is not taken off of it. The whole quantity is placed on the fire. So there's nothing else that is matir it. U'minchas kohen moshiach. This is a reference to the daily meal offering that a kohen gadol brings. He brings part in the morning and part in the afternoon. This is called Chavite Kohen Gadol. That too is something that's completely burned on the Mizbeach. In other words, there's no other item that is matir it. The Hadam, the blood of Korbanos, the blood is the matir for the Korban, but nothing is matir the blood. The Hanisochim Haboim Bifnei Atzman. These are wine offerings that one can don't dedicate and bring to the Beis HaMikdash. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is Rabbi Meir's opinion. What's maybe no less important is that which is not stated over here. And we've written this in between the lines. Rabbi Meir just said that drink offerings or wine offerings that come on their own, they do not become pigol. However, if someone brings a korban, and many korbanos have nesachim that are part and parcel of the korban itself, of the animal sacrifice, along with the animal sacrifice, a wine offering is brought. If one has a machsheves pigol while processing the animal offering, the nesachim will become pigol along with the animal. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. The Chachomim disagree on that point, and they say, Af HaBoin Im HaBehemo. nesachim that come along with an animal offering, if one has a machsheves pigol while, let us say, slaughtering the animal or sprinkling the blood of the animal, the wine offering that accompanies it does not become affected. And the reason for that is that when one brings an animal offering, true, he has an obligation to bring the wine offering as well. However, it need not be brought on the same day. It can be brought even a number of days later. So therefore, it has a sort of independent status. So therefore, the machsheves pigul that one has while offering the animal offering itself, according to the Chachomim, the wine offering is not affected. Lug shemen shel metzora. Rabbi Shimon Omer, regarding the lug. Lug is a quantity of oil that comes along with the korban osham that a metzora brings when he leaves his period of tuma. So Rabbi Shimon says, "Ein chayovim alav mishum pigol." That means if the korban osham, the osham sacrifice, was offered with a pigol thought, with a pigol mindset, then according to Rabbi Shimon, the lug shemen that is part of the tahara process would not be affected. Rabbi Meir Omer, chayovim alav mishum pigol. According to Rabbi Meir, the machsheves pigol that one has while offering the osham will affect the lug shemen. And why is that? Shedam ha'osham matiroi. Because the blood application that takes place with the blood of the korban osham is the basis for which the oil can be applied later on. So according to Rabbi Meir, the oil has a matir. And being that it is something that has a matir, it is something that can be subject to machsheves pigul. Rashi adds two words here that are very significant. Rashi and Rabbi Meir Omer, lug habo im ha'osham boi bayom. If he brings the lug of oil together with the osham on that very same day, then, and if he has a machsheves pigul during the osham offering, it will affect the oil as well. Continuing in the Mishnah, v'chol shiyesh lo matirin, anything that has a matir, that anything that receives an allowance through the offering of something else, bein l'adam bein l'mizbeach, whether it's a matir for the person or it has a matir for being offered on the mizbeach. In other words, a korban ola, for example, which is something that is not eaten by people. However, one does zrikas adam, he does blood sprinkling of the korban ola, that enables the limbs to be then offered on the mizbeach. So anything like that that has a matir, chayovin olav mishum pigol. Examples. We've listed the examples using a number that you see in a diamond. Ha'oila, doma matir es besara lamizbeach, v'oira lekehanim. The sprinkling of the blood of the korban ola, even though it is, as we just said, something that's not eaten, however, its blood allows the limbs to be offered on the mizbeach, and allows the skin of the ola to be given to the kehanim. Oilas ha'oif, another example of something that's not eaten, a bird ola offering, doma matir es besara lamizbeach. The blood applications of the olas of the blood application allows the rest of the bird to be put on the fire of the mizbeach. Chatas oif is something that is eaten by the kehanim. Doma matir es bisara lekehanim. The blood applications of that bird offering, the bird sin offering, enables the meat to be eaten by the kehanim. Porim hanisrafim usir hanisrafim. These are animals that are completely burnt. Their entire carcass is burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. They include certain kinds of cow offerings and goat offerings. Domon, their blood application to the blood that's sprinkled of those korbanos, matir es emurehem likorev. It enables the emurim, the innards of those korbanos, to be offered on the Mizbeach. And therefore, if one is mefagel, one has a machsheves pigol during the blood applications, those emurim will become pigol. Those innards become pigol. We now see another shita, Rabbi Shimon, he disagrees with regard to the parim and esrafim. We should have mentioned that the parim and esrafim and the siram and esrafim are types of korbanos that are not their blood applications are done on the inner and in the Heichal. They're not done on the outer Mizbeach. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol She'ein al HaMizbeach HaChitzon Kishlomim, those types of korbanos that are not treated on the Mizbeach, they're not dealt with on the outside altar, the altar that stood in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, like the Shlomim was. It's important to note that the source for Pigul is found by the Korban Shlomim, by the Shlomim sacrifice. Therefore, the Shlomim sacrifice, according to Rabbi Shimon, serves as an archetype for the halachas concerning Pigul. And therefore, if you have a Korban whose blood is not applied to the outside Mizbeach, like you do have in the case of Shlomim, Ein Chayovim Olav Mishum Pigul. There is no Pigul. Pigul will not be the label attached to such a korban. In other words, if one processes does the blood sprinkling of the Purim and Esrafim with a kavona of chutz lizmano, it does not become pigul. Omar Ula. Ula is about to say a halacha that it's hard to understand what he's saying, and as a result of that difficulty, the Gemara will go through a number of stages in trying to decipher what he says. So, Omar Ula, Koimetz Pigol Sheheloi Al Gabi HaMizbeach. A Koimetz is the handful of meal offering that the Kohen takes and brings the handful of this meal offering and places it on the fire of the Mizbeach. So a koimetz of the that one did, let us say the kohen took the koimetz with a pigul mindset, with the intention of eating the remainder at the wrong time, and then he brings this on the mizbeach, shelo al gabi hamizbeach, poka pigulo mimenu. Literally, it would mean that the pigul is canceled. Im achirim mevi lidei pigul, hu atzmoi lo kol shekein. This expression, as we said, we will leave it untranslated, leaving that job for the Gemara. The Gemara asks, "My ko'omar," literally, what is being said? But now let's look at Rashi for this. "My ko'omar de boi lemeimar poka pigulo mimenu." What is being said by Ula that results in the pigul departing from this koimetz? Vinosiv taimo deboi lidei pigul, and he brings as a reason that it causes other things to become pigul. The Gemara explains now, hochi ko'omar, im eino miskabel, if it were not accepted, if this koimetz of pigul were not something accepted for burning on the mizbeach, heich mevi acherim lidei pigul, how could it be that it causes the remainder of the korban mincha to become pigul? So rather, you must come to the conclusion that the haktora of the koimetz of pigul is a sound haktora. It's a full-fledged haktora, full-fledged offering. And therefore, it's something that becomes accepted. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Heich mevi achirim lidei pigul. Three lines under the Gemara text. Hamakter koimetz amenas shiuchas shirayim lemochar. One who offers the handful of the mule offering with the intention that the remainder shall be eaten the next day, which is the wrong time. Heich mincha mispageles. How could the mincha become pigul? Im ein haktorosoi haktora. Let's take a look at the Shita Mekubetzes, Yud Zayin. You can see this at the lower part of the page, the letter Yud Zayin in the Shita Mekubetzes. He says, Im ein haktorosu shel kometz haktora. If the haktora of the kometz that was taken with a pigul mindset, if its haktora is not considered a sound haktora, how could the rest of the shirayim become pigul? V'bo'inon korvu matirov. In order for something to become pigul, the matir of it would have to have been offered properly. Elavadai korvu matirov karinon bay. Therefore, we must conclude that the offering of the kometz that was taken with a pigul mindset is considered a sound offering. Now, how is that? The poka pigul la mimenu. The pigul label must have departed from it. Was poka is to become to be voided. The lochein kovash yiram the pigul, and therefore it has the power of labeling or causing the remainder to become pigul. Vehochi ko'omar, and we go back into the Rashi. Vehochi ko'omar, hu atzmo lo kol shekein shi iskabel acharei shem iskabel l'ratzos acherim l'pigulo. The koimetz itself, even though it was taken with a pigul mindset with regard to the shirayim, if it's causing the shirayim to become pigul, it must be that its own offering, the offering of the koimetz, is considered a full-fledged offering, and that would entail the voiding of the pigul label with regard to the kometz itself. The Gemara asks, "My komashmalon, what are you telling me right now? In simple terms, what are you telling me by this hafkoas pigul with regard to the kometz?" Now, we have a geometric form, one of our series markings. We're employing the trapezoid or volcano form, and we explain on the outside margin under our Mivne heading. You see the trapezoid form is featured. Shlovim lahazbir divrei ula be'inyan kometz pigul. These are stages of the Gemara in its attempt to explain what is ula trying to reveal to us. So the Gemara is asking, what are you saying? E de'ein chayovin olav mishom pigul. If all you're trying to tell me is that, if you were to, let us say, eat the kometz, and one who would eat the kometz, there would be no pigul violation. I don't really need ula to tell me that. Tanina. We have that in our Mishnah. Now, well, there's a frame section, which is a quote from our Mishnah. In our Gemara markings, we frame all Tanaic sections that appear. And in this case, this is simply a quote from our Mishnah. We've also dashed, underlined one word, which is the key word for this particular quote. The word hakometz. You can see two lines from here. We've learned already, Elu dvorim she'ein chayovim aleihem mishum pigul. The following are items that are not guilty if one consumes them of pigul. Hakoimetz, v'akteres v'alavono minchas koinim minchas koin moshiach minchas nisachim v'hadom. All we need to see from this source is the fact that hakoimetz is included in the list of things that do not become pigul. So what do I need Ula to tell me that from... What do I need Ula to tell me that which is already stated in the Mishnah? Ella, a second stage in trying to figure this out. What did Ula try to say? Ella di'im alu lo yerdu. Maybe what Ula is saying is that a kometz pigul, a person took a handful from a mincha offering with a pigul mindset, and he brings that kometz onto the mezbeach. Maybe what Ula is saying, that once it's brought up, it should not be brought down. Obviously, if one did the kometz with an incorrect mindset, he should stop everything right there. He's ruined the korban. However, let us say he goes ahead and brings it up to the mizbeach anyway. So maybe Ula is telling me that if it's brought up, it doesn't come down. Well, once again, what do I need Ula for? Tanina, we have a Tanaic source that conveys that information, which says, Halon v'hayotze v'hatome v'shenishchat chutz lizmano v'chutz lemkomo. These are examples of pigul. This is talking about a case of an animal offering that's slaughtered with the incorrect mindset that we can easily parallel to our meal offering that was taken with the incorrect mindset, the out-of-time mindset. It says in that Mishnah, im olu lo yerdu. So focusing specifically on the case of shenishchat chutz lizmano, it says here, if it's brought up, it doesn't come down. In other words, that the mizbeach is collated, catches it, keeps it there. So what do I need ula for? The ela, maybe this is what ula is trying to tell me. Di'im yordu. If after the kometz pigul was brought up, it was taken off the mizbeach, and ula maybe is trying to tell me, ya'alu. Let's read that again. Di'im yardu. Ya'alu. Maybe that's what he's trying to convey. Well, to that we say, Tanino, we've learned that that's not the case. The source says, "Kishem shim olu lo yerdu." Just like the items that were just mentioned before in the source just before this, that said, if they're brought up, they do not come down because the mizbech keeps them there. The mizbech was kolayt kach im yerdu lo ya'alu. That likewise, if they're taken off the mizbech, they should not be brought back up. Don't forget, these are things that are problematic, whether it be the pigul thing or it's tome or it's nosar, whatever they are. They should not be brought back up if they're taken down. So we haven't made any progress. What is Ula trying to teach us that we don't know already from Tanaic sources? Loi tsricha. I do need Ula. Shemoshla bohen ha'ur. Let us focus on the example that Ula was teaching. A handful of a meal offering was brought up on the Mizbeach. Now this handful was taken from the bowl containing the mincha with a wrong time intention, a pigul intention. He brought it up on the Mizbeach. He put it in the fire. The fire took hold of it. That's Moshla Bahana'ur. The fire took hold of it. It started burning it. At that point, he then took it off the Mizbeach. He grabbed it out of the fire and took it off the Mizbeach. So what Ula is telling me, if that's the case, it is in fact to be brought back up onto the Mizbeach. It's become lachmoy shel Mizbeach. It's become like the bread of the altar. The Gemara asks, do I need Ula over here to tell me that? Ha nami omra Ula chada zimna. Ula himself has taught this on another occasion, and if that's the case, he doesn't have to repeat himself. The Oma Ula loy shanu Ela Shaloi Moshla Bohen Haur. The din of Im Olu Lo Yerdu is true. Im Yerdu Lo Yalu. The din of, if it's taken off, it's not to be brought back up, is true. Ela Shaloi Moshla Bohen Haur. Avlo Moshla Bohen Haur Yalu. But if the fire did take hold of it, then even though they were taken off, they are to be brought back up. So what is Ula in the opening cryptic remark of his trying to tell me that I don't know already, either from Tanaic sources or from Ula himself? The Gemara answers, Mahu Dutema. Without Ula over here that features the comets, you'll notice under Ula's, when Ula taught his teaching, we dashed underlined the word comets. It's essentially for this particular point in the Gemara. One might have thought, without Ula over here, Hani Mili, this idea of Moshla Bohena Ur, where the fire takes hold of something, causing it to be brought back up, even after it's taken off the Mizbeach, maybe all of this halach is limited, Hani Mili, Ever de Mechaber. That's a reference to the limb of an animal, let's say the limb of an animal that was processed with a pigul mindset. The limb of an animal is one solid entity. It's a solid limb. It's not granular. It's not made of parts. It's a single entity. So something like that, one might say that since the fire took hold of part of it, that's Moshla Bohena Ur, the fire took hold of part of it, it's considered as completely part of the Mizbeach now. Avol Kometz de Mifras, the comets of a meal offering, which is granular, even if it's a baked good, it's something that can be turned into crumbs, but there were actually some meal offerings that were brought as soles, so it was really granular. So since it's mifras means something that's separate parts, it's not one solid, it's not like the limb of an animal, one solid piece. Amolo, I might have thought that if the fire took hold of part of it, and it was taken off the Mizbeach, then I wouldn't bring it up back onto the Mizbeach. Rashi at the top line says, Avol Kometz de Mifras. Rashi in the middle there says, he's an Emo, B'may de Moshla Moshla. That part of the Kometz that was taken hold of by the fire, so that's considered part of the Mizbeach. Idoch ki de Koi Koi. The balance that hasn't been singed or taken hold of by the fire remains as is. And if this was taken off the Mizbeach, I would say that the part of the kometz that the fire took hold of, that part you bring back on. But the part of the kometz that was not affected by the fire, that stays off the Mizbeach. Komash Malon, the Kule Kechad Eiver Domi. The Chiddush of Ula is, and this is why it had to be taught by the case of the meal offering per se, is that it is to be treated like the limb. So just like in the case of limb, we have Moshlo Bohena Ur, where the fire takes hold of part of the limb, and it was a pigol korban, and it was taken off the Mizbeach by the mere fact that it was Moshlo Bohena Ur, the limb is brought back on. The same thing we are going to say with regard to the handful, the koimetz of the mincha, that the fire took hold of part of it. The whole kometz is brought back on the Mizbeach in the event that it had been taken off. Let's read that last phrase again. Avo kometz de mifras emolo. The kometz which is granular, which is not a solid entity, I might have thought that the halacha does not apply to it. Komash molon, this is what Ula, in his opening cryptic remark, was conveying to us, that the limb, the kometz, is to be treated the same way as the limb, and when taken off, it is to be brought back on. Of course, we're not repeating all the details again and again and again, but don't forget, we're talking about the kometz of a pigol mincha. Omar Rav Achoy, Hilkoch, Hai kometz pigol, de palge mochis ha'ara u palge aske amarocha. If you have a handful of a meal offering, part of which was brought onto the Mizbeach, and part of it is mochis ha'ara, still on the ground, part is still on the ground, and part was aske amarocha, was put into the fire. Umoshlo bo es ha'ur, and the fire took hold of the half of the kometz that you put into the fire. Maskino le lekule lechatchilo, you are to bring up the rest of the handful of the meal offering to the Mizbeach. He's going, we'll say, a little bit further, not only a case where the kometz had been put in the fire and then taken off the Mizbeach, but even where only part was put into the fire initially, since we're viewing the kometz as a single entity, therefore if part of it was put in the fire, it draws the other half, so to speak, up onto the Mizbeach and into the fire as well. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a note on the outside margin, a nosei, a topic heading that we'll take a glance at. Nosei, Dino Shel Rabbi Yochanan, Hapigul Vanoiser Vatome, Shehelon Legavi Mizbeach, Poka Isur Mehen. These items, they're problematic types of sacrifices, whether it's we're talking about Pigul, which is the korban process with an incorrect mindset with regard to time or place. Nosor is an animal korban that was left over beyond the correct eating time, and atome, something became ritually impure, and these things, which the chatchila should not be brought on the Mizbeach, at the outset they should not be brought, but let's say they were brought on the Mizbeach. Poka isur mehen, their isur, their prohibition, becomes voided. It's almost as if the Mizbeach is serving, the altar is serving like a type of mikveh, like a type of purifying agent. So we're going to now read the Gemara, and want to take note of a point very shortly after we read this section. Omer of Yitzchok, Omer of Yochanan, Hapigul v'hanoyser v'atomei, Shehelon l'gabi Mizbeach, Poka isur mehen. These items, as we just mentioned under our no-say heading, if they are brought on the Mizbeach, their isur poka becomes voided from them. In other words, it sounds like they're no longer prohibited. According to Rashi, we have a little note that we've included on the inside margin based on that which you can see in Rashi himself. According to Rashi and the point the Hagoz Habach makes in his in the Ois Aleph, that which we say poka isuran, when you're talking about pigol, the isur is that if they are taken off the Mizbeach, they are to be brought back on the Mizbeach. And as Rabbi Zeira says momentarily, like we saw in the previous discussion regarding Ulos Din and the Komets, this is provided Moshlo Bohena Ur, that it was taken hold of by the fire, that the limb or whatever whatever item that was pigal was brought on the Mizbech. And we said, Paka Iser, what Iser? The Iser of having it been brought on the Mizbech is removed. And how does that manifest itself? That even if it was taken off the Mizbeach, since it was Moshe Labayna Ur, it's to be brought back on the Mizbeach. So the Isser of being brought on the Mizbeach is voided. There's no longer that prohibition. However, when we talk about Nosar and Tomei, the Isser there that's voided is similar. 2 points here. Similar to the case of Pigol, that if it's taken off, it is brought back on. And a second point which it doesn't seem to apply in the case of Pigol, as according to Rashi and the Bach Ois Aleph, this is something that seems to be unique to the Noser and Tomei, that if one were to eat them, eat the Noser or the Tomei, after it was brought on them as Beach, he would not be Chayav for violating these offenses, the offense of eating Noser and Tomei. However, with regard to Pigol, it doesn't seem that that particular offense is voided. But it seems that the Pigol label sticks to it with regard to eating of it. What we just said is based on our understanding of Rashi and the Hagoy Sabach Ois Aleph. If there are other approaches, so be it. But this is what we've seen here on our daf. Continuing in the Gemara, Omar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda reacts to Rav Yochanan's din, and he says, Mori Difi, author of this teaching, it's an expression of wonderment, Mizbeach Mikveh Tara, does the altar serve as a purification agent, like a mikveh does, like a mikveh which purifies people that were tamei? Omar Rebbe Zera, it's not the mere being brought on the Mizbeach that serves to void the prohibition, but rather it's Shemosh Labona Ur, the fire has taken hold of it. And as a result of that, the item, it's either you can say, well, the fire is a purification source, which in fact there are sources for suggesting such a thing, or you can explain this as that, well, once the fire takes hold of it, that's what causes it to become attached to the Mizbeach. It becomes lachmoy shel Mizbeach, like the bread of the altar, and as a result of that, its status changes. As we continue in the Gemara, we're going to be employing a trapezoid form in order to keep track of the back and forth discussion that we're about to embark on. This question that starts now, with the trapezoid form, with the narrow part facing up, that represents a question. With it flipped over will be a response. To restate the most recent teaching, korbonos, even though they were problematic, and we, amongst other things, we mentioned tuma, the tuma can be rescinded, can be voided. Mosiv Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Bisna. Here we have a source that deals with the realm of tuma. And the goal of this source is to say that the pasuk that talks about the prohibition of tuma, that carries with it a kores penalty, there is a situation of kores in the context of tuma, that is a reference to the case of what's known as tumas haguf, where the person is tamei, where a person who is tamei is eating tohor meat. The pasuk that's cited here is a pasuk that has certain elements of vagueness to it. There are pronouns that are used, and it's not 100% clear at first glance who is tamei. Is it the person, or is it the meat? when dealing with a person, the term nefesh is used. The word nefesh is of a as far as grammar is concerned, is of a feminine nature. The meat would be characterized by masculine terms. So if there's a pronoun that is going to apply to something, and if it's in the masculine, it would then, in our case, show us that you're talking about the meat. If it were feminine, it would then tell us that we're talking about the person. Everything that we've said is true in general. However, we're going to see in our sugya a major exception to this approach. Achirim Omrim. We're reading the question of Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisna. He quotes a Tanaic source, Achirim Omrim, the Tum'asei Olav. Mi shetuma poirachas mimenu. Olav, someone who has tuma upon him. And as we said, the word olav is a masculine word. As such, one would think that it's referring to the tuma is upon the meat. However, the source says that we're talking about a type of tuma that is still on it, which is mashma, which implies it's still on it, but can be removed at a later date. So the subject of the pasuk is someone or something that's tomei, whose tumah can be removed. We might have said, as by way of background, general background, we know of a concept of a person who's tomei immersing in a mikveh and thereby removing the tumah. But food items, there is no precedent for food items being immersed in a mikveh and becoming tohar. There may be one exception with regard to water that's tamei, but that's not part of our sugya. In general, food items that became tamei do not have tara b'mikvah. So we have a pasuk describing someone who is involved with holiness while tamei, a type of tumor, a situation of tumor that can escape, can be removed. And that's what the Bryce is saying. The posuk that says v'tumasu olav, mi shetuma poirachas mimenu. The posuk is describing one whose tuma can be removed. Poirachas, literally to fly away, to be removed. Yotza basar, to the exclusion of meat. In other words, the posuk is not talking about meat, even though the word olav appears here, and grammatically olav would apply to the meat. The chiddush here is, since it says tumaso olav, we're describing something whose tumah can be removed. That would exclude basar, yotza basar, she'ein tumah parachas mimenu. Tumah cannot escape meat. Once meat, which is a representative of all food items, once they become tomei, the tumah sticks, nothing can get rid of their tumah. However, in light of Rabbi Yochanan's teaching that we just saw before, how can you be so quick to exclude meat from this discussion? Maybe when it's the posuk in Vayikra Zion, which is featuring the tumaso olav, it's referring to tuma on the meat. We just got finished seeing in under Rabbi Yochanan's teaching that meat, when brought on the mizbeach, even if it were tameh, the tuma is removed from it. He said, "Paka isur mehen," the isur of tuma, the prohibition of tuma, leaves it. Let's read this in the Gemara. V'im Esau, if it were so that Basar Kodshim can become Torah by being brought on the Mizbeach, Hare Tuma Porachas Mimenu Ayadei Ha'ur. Tuma escapes or leaves it through the fire. So how is it so how can the Brisa be so sure that we are coming to exclude meat? Omar Rava. The Brisa, Rava explains the Brisa, while preserving Rabbi Yochanan's teaching as well. He says what the Brisa is saying is that al yadei mikveh ko aminan. The Brisa is describing tumaso olav, which we meant olav is currently on, but leaving us with the impression it can depart. How would the tuma depart? Through mikveh immersion. Now, if you qualify that, if you qualify the tuma poirachas mimenu al yidei mikveh by saying tuma that leaves through immersion in the mikveh, so we will in fact be excluding meat, because albeit tuma can leave meat as Reb Yochanan taught, and with Reb Zeira's comment, through the fire, but that's not the subject of the source and its approach to understanding the pasuk v'tum also alav. The Gemara asks, but the pasuk itself doesn't say that qualification. Midi mikveh ksiv. The doesn't say mikveh. It's mashma that the tumaso alav, tuma on that which can depart through any means, including the fire. And it says here, yotza basar, to the exclusion of basar, that tuma doesn't leave it through any means, including the fire. That would be a direct kasha on Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Elo Omar Rav Papa. The Besar Shlomim Askinon, the Lo Chozi Lahakrova. Rav Papa is telling us as follows, that as far as the basic halacha is concerned, Bosar could lose its tuma, can escape tuma by being put on the fire, if you were talking about Bosar that's destined for the fire, that is supposed to be put on the fire. And that would be the case with regard to the limbs of an Ola korban. An Ola is kulo kolil, as an animal that's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. However, when you're dealing with Bosar that's not designed to be put in the fire and is put there, the tuma will not depart it. So that is the point that is being excluded when we say the Bosar is excluded, the tuma does not depart it. Besar Shlomim does not depart. Ravina Omar. Ravina says that you don't have to limit yourself to the Besar Shlomim. The subject of this could be the Emurim as well. And the expression of the Tumaso Alav, when we mention Emurim, by the way, Emurim, as opposed to what Rav Papa says, that Besar Shlomim is something that's not Chozi Lahakrova, Emurim innards are Chozi Lahakrova. But even so, if you've got Emurim that are Tomei, that nevertheless, that is not the subject of this source. When it says, Yotza Bosar Shein Tumo Porachas Mimenu, because what the Pasuk is trying to convey when it says Vitum also alav, Ravina Omar, let's read this again, Ravina Omar, Vitum also alav means, equals, Mi Shetuma Poirachas Mimenu Kishuhu Shalem. Someone whose Tuma departs when he is complete. For example, a person. When he immerses in the mikveh, he is a complete human being. He walks into the mikveh Tomei, he comes out in the same physical state, now Tahor. Yotza Basar, to the exclusion of the case of meat, She'ein Tuma Pirachas Kishu Shalem, Ela Kishu Choser. When we talk about a korban, when we talk about meat becoming tohor through the fire, it can very well become tohor through the fire, but it's in limb form. It's no longer Shalem. It's not complete anymore. Let us glance at the Rashi. Ravina Omar, you see Rashi across from here. Af a'evorim horim uzbeach ksivi hacha. The posuk that mentions, that we're analyzing, implies a'evorim as well. A'evorim are the limbs of the animal, and it could be the limbs of a korban ola, which are designed to be put in the fire. But even so, they are excluded from this particular teaching, because, as he taught, they achieve tara, but they're not complete. They are in limb form. Rashi goes on that with regard to a'evorim, we are in fact talking about over here dichtiv. Asher Lashem, the same pasuk that we've been referring to in Vayikra Zion, mentions and we have, by the way, we've included the psukim. It may be a very small print, but you can see in the outside margin of the upper part of the page that the required psukim are included in our Gemara edition. Pasuk Chof, which is the second pasuk quoted here, it says, "Vanefesh sher toichal basar mizeva shlomim asher l'Hashem." That expression asher l'Hashem includes limbs of a korban ola, the tumaso alav, which is the expression we've been darshaning, and it goes on to say, "V'nichus nefesh ahi me'ameha." The soul of that individual, the nefesh of that individual, will be cut off. So, which is the penalty of kores. So the Rashi goes on to say, since it says asher l'Hashem, that's l'rabo yisho emurim. It's coming to include the innards as well. V'afilu hochi lo takshe. And nevertheless, still there's no room for asking a question. The shapir yalfinon minei, the tumo lavo layokoi. That from this source we can nevertheless learn that the term tuma they refer to in this pasuk is not referring to the limbs or the innards of a korban that are put in the fire. Midichti v'tum also alav. From the fact that that's the chosen expression, the mashma, the roi, b'roi lafriach tumasuk shu shalem, ke'en shekibla, that we're talking about an item or an entity whose tuma will leave it as it was when it was, when it became tome. The alav be'en ne mashma, the word alav, on him, has this connotation, be'en ne means as it was. So after all said and done, what have we accomplished in the sugya? We have Rabbi Yochanan's din that says that tome that's brought on the mizbeach, the tuma, amongst other isurim here, he mentioned tuma as well, tuma can depart from it. And Rav Zera says that's true if it's put in the fire and the fire takes hold of it. We saw a source that implied that tuma does not leave it. The Gemara answers that, well, Tumah does leave it, like Rabbi Yochanan, but nevertheless, in defining the pasuk that says, V'tum also alav, we're referring to people, because it's only by people that the Tumah leaves them, leaving them in the same physical state as they were when the Tumah settled upon them, the person. In the case of the meat, the Tuma leaves the meat only after the animal has been dismembered into limbs. And that's not necessarily the same state as it was when it absorbed the Tuma. Hence, Tumas Boser is excluded, and the Pasuk, which features the penalty of Kores, for Tuma, is talking about a person who is Tomei, who is eating sacrifices that themselves are Tohor. Gufa. We now have a quote from that which was mentioned above in passing, or was mentioned above, not necessarily in passing, but was a partial quote. The Gemara now will quote the entire source. So we have a frame section. As you can see, it lasts a number of lines, and there are triangles featured in the source, and we'll momentarily see what those are referring to. The fourth triangle features the source that we were just grappling with, the Achirim source. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh heading, and a triangle is featured. Mivneh is a structural note. We'll see here four hoichochois, four proofs. Shaposuk v'tum also yolov, that's Vayikra perek zayin posuk chof, medubar v'tumas aguf, v'lo v'tumas bosar. That the posuk is featuring a person who is Tomei, eating sacrificial meat, that's Tohor, and as a result of that, suffering the penalty of Kores, the punishment of Kores. This is to be understood in contrast, and that's the point of this source, to a person who may be Tohor, but he is eating Tomei meat, where the sacrificial meat became Tomei. That situation is different. And that's, in other words, that situation is not the subject of this pasuk. In fact, that situation of a Tohar person eating Tomei meat, that would not result in a Kores punishment. Gufa. V'tum asoy olav. This is a quote from Vayikra Zayin Pasuk Chof that you can actually see that we've printed into the outside margin in the upper part of the page. Betumas haguf hakosuv medaber. This pasuk, which is quoted here only in two words, but it's a reference to a situation of tuma that would result in kores. We're talking about tumas haguf, or the person. Guf is a reference to the person is tame and is eating korbanos in that state. Ata oimer betumas haguf eino elo betumas basar. Are you telling me that it's referring to person that's tame and not to meat that's tame? Maybe it's talking about meat that's tame. And we might add, and Rashi spends a lot of time elaborating on this, we won't, but there is good reason for thinking that maybe it's talking about Tumas Basar, and that's because the word Olav appears, which is in the masculine form, and that is the proper gender, grammatical gender, when referring to meat. If you really wanted to talk about a person, the word would have been... The pronoun of olav would have been oleha, because the word for person that the pasuk uses, which the pasuk in fact uses, is the word v'hanefesh, and the word nefesh is a feminine gender. In other words, that's a grammatical point. It's not referring to a lady per se, but in Hebrew, different words fall either into masculine form or feminine form, not referring to the actual person per se, but since nefesh in Hebrew is of a feminine gender, the word olav would not have been appropriate, because the word olav is a pronoun referring to a male. So that's why we're in a quandary, and therefore we've got to settle the issue. And the first approach is as follows: Ne'emar kan tum osoi, ve'ne'emar lahalon tum osoi boi. And in Bamidbar, Perek Yutes Posuk Yud Gimel, which is talking about Tumas Mikdash, the prohibition of entering the Beis HaMikdash in a state of Tuma, there we're talking clearly about a person that's Tomei who walks into the Beis HaMikdash. So you see the word Tumaso over there. Ma Lahalon, just like over there, in the case of Tumas Mikdash in Bamidbar Yutes, Betumas Aguf Akosu Medaber, Afkan. So to over here in Vayikra Zayin, where the word Tuma appears as well, Betumas Haguf Akosuv Medaber. We're talking about a person being Tomei. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi has his approach to clarifying this pasuk. Hoyel v'nemru kochim v'loshen rabim. The word shlomim. It's a type of sacrifice, a shlomim sacrifice. And it's a, grammatically speaking, the word shlomim is in a plural form. V'nemra tuma v'loshon yochid. And the tuma appears in a singular form. Therefore, I know I'm not talking about the meat. B'tumas haguf hakosu medaber. We're talking about the person. Rebbe Omer, v'ochal. The pasuk mentions at the beginning of Pasuk Chof, it says Vanefesh Asher Tochal. You have in Pasuk Chof Aleph the Pasuk which also deals with Tum, it says V'ochal Mipsar Zevach HaShlomim. So you see there the word V'ochal, the eater. So we know the subject of the Pasuk, and who's the subject of the Tumah, is Betumas Haguf HaKosu Medaber. It's talking about the person. So Rebbe's proof, we should emphasize, is from Pasuk Chof Aleph, as Rashi points out. From the Pasuk that's next to it, we can prove the meaning of the Pasuk right before it, namely Pasuk Chof, which is our Pasuk, which we said before is the unclear expression, the Tumasu Olav. So Rebbe suggests you look at Pasuk Chof Aleph and you see that a person is the focus of the attention. Therefore, the Pasuk before is talking about the person. Rebbe will be the subject of a discussion very shortly after this source. Achirim omru v'tumasoi olav, mi shetuma poirachas mimenu, someone from whom the tumah departs. This we discussed at length before. The word olav implying it's on him now, but can leave later. Yotza basar she'ein tumah porachas mimenu. This is to the exclusion of meat from which tumah does not depart. And without getting involved with the elaborate discussion above, on a simplistic level, we know that meat is something that is not subject to tumah departing from it. But even if you say, well, there, like Rabbi Yochanan taught before, there are situations, nevertheless, using the Gemara's answer before, it doesn't depart when the meat is sholem. It departs when it's in limb form. So it's not like a person. And the implication of the pasuk is, as we said, tumah departing from it when it's complete, as opposed to basar, when the even if you say tumah departs, but it's not complete. This is the explanation that the Gemara featured above, through which we successfully exclude meat from this pasuk. Omar Mar. This is a quote from what we just saw above. Rebbe Omer, the Ochal, Betumas Haguf Hakosuv Medaber. My Mashma. The question is, how is it that you can prove from a different pasuk, from the following pasuk, that the pasuk before was also talking about Tumas Haguf? If we look at Rashi, a few lines under the Gemara, so My Mashma, Mikra de Basrei, from the following pasuk, namely pasuk Chof Aleph, de Kama, which is pasuk Chof, betumas haguf, that it is talking about tumas haguf. That pasuk Chof is also talking about tumas haguf. Dilma Basra betumas haguf. Maybe pasuk Chof Aleph is talking about the person who's tamei kidichtiv, as it says, nefesh asher tiga b'chol tamei. There, the subject of the pasuk is the person, nefesh, a person who touches tuma. The Kama, the Tumas Bosar, and the Pasuk before is talking about the meat being Tomei. Midalok Siv, it doesn't say the Tumaso Oleho, it doesn't say the Tuma is on it, the Nefesh, the person. The Mishtama da Nefesh Esher Tocha Bosar Koi. If it would have said Oleho, then we would have been able to connect the Tumaso Oleho, which it doesn't say, to that which preceded it in Pasuk Chof, Anefesh Esher Tocha Basar, the person. It's true that Pasuk Chof opened up with the person eating of the meat, but the Tuma, it might be, the Tuma is not regarding the person. It's regarding the meat, where the Pasuk is in effect saying that a person who eats meat, that is Tomei, because the word Olav appears, which would have, as we said a number of times before, which leads us to think that we're talking about the meat being Tomei. So how is it that Rebbe can use information from Pasuk Chof Aleph, which is clearly referring to a person, and have that, cast that upon Pasuk Chof to help define Tumaso Olav as a reference to Tuma on the person? Omar Rava. Rava, he doesn't answer this directly. He opens up with a little bit of an introduction. And Rava will tell us, and we'll have to be very sensitive to the markings that we see in the Gemara. We see, as we just look ahead in the Gemara, we see two diamonds. One refers to a pasuk, and the other refers to a Tanaic source. And Rava will tell us that any pasuk that's not explained by Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, and any Tanaic source that's not explained by Zeiri, then doesn't have an explanation. Or, in other words, Rava is complimenting these two sages in their abilities to explain items or sources that seem to be cryptic. Upon our initial reading, we're going to focus on the issue of a pasuk that's not clear, because we're dealing right now with pasuk Chof that has Tumaso Olav in it, which is an unclear expression. On the one hand, it seems grammatically to refer to the meat. On the other hand, we're trying to say that it's referring to the person being Tamei. So Rava tells us that this pasuk needs to be explained by Rav Yitzchak. We have in brackets a reference to a brisa that's not explained. That will be dealt with later. The Gemara will then bring us the unclear Tanaic source and go through its clarification. And if you skim down the page a little bit, just a few lines later, you can see another bracket that appears, and there's also a bracket length indicator up to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text that from that point until Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, down a number of lines from the top, these brackets will continue and finally be closed, at which point the Gemara will have successfully explained, through Zairi's assistance, have explained the unclear Tanaic source. But as far as our sugya is concerned right now, we don't have to deal with that. We're dealing right now with the Tum'aso Alav. We're focusing on Rebbe's approach. Rebbe cited Pasuk Chof Aleph as helping to clarify the meaning of Pasuk Chof. And our question is right now, how is it that that Pasuk Chof Aleph helps to clarify Pasuk Chof? So Rava tells us, and we'll read this again, Omar Rava, Kol kro delo miforish le Rav Yitzchok bar Avudimi, skipping the brackets, lo mifrisha. Any Pasuk that Rav Yitzchok bar Avudimi doesn't explain remains coded, remains unclear. Let's say somewhat of a complimentary expression that Rava pays to Rav Yitzchok. Hachi Omar Rav Yitzchok bar Avudimi. Thusly, Rav Yitzchok bar Avudimi says in explaining the pasuk. He tells us that when you look at pasuk Chof Aleph, it opens up in the feminine, in the middle. A masculine grammatical form appears, and it closes with the feminine form. So you have a situation of a sandwich, two feminines on either side, with a masculine form in the middle. The pasuk just before, pasuk chof, has the same structure. And just like in pasuk chof aleph, it is clear to us that we're referring to tumas haguf, even though it has this strange grammatical structure, so too, Pasuk Chof is to be understood the same way. And as far as Tumas Bosser is concerned, Tumas Bosser was discussed in Pasuk Yutes, Rashi says, but it reached a point in Pasuk Yutes that it finished talking about Tumas Bosser. And everything from that point on was focusing on Tumas Haguf. So that's what's stated here in a somewhat brief fashion. Rashi elaborates quite a bit more on the topic. But for our purposes, we're basically saying that the proof from Pasuk Chof Aleph to explain Pasuk Chof is based on an issue of structure, the sandwich structure. Reading again his name, Omar of Yitzchok bar Avudimi, Hoyul uposach hakosuv beloshon nekeva, v'siem beloshon nekeva, v'loshon zohar be'emza. Since the posuk opened up with a loshon nekeva, and we mentioned also that the word nefesh is a word that is in a feminine form, and that's a reference, nefesh is also a reference to the person. So since the pasuk opened and closed in the feminine form, which is shayach to the nefesh, which is shayach to the person, and in the middle there was a masculine form, the whole pasuk is referring to the person, the nefesh. And just like that was the structure of pasuk chof aleph, Pasuk Chof Aleph, you might note, opened up with v'nefesh ki tiga b'chol tamei, and at the end of the pasuk, it says v'nichrso ha'nefesh ahi, and in the middle of Pasuk Chof Aleph, the expression was v'ochal, not v'ochla, v'ochal, which is in the masculine form, but that pasuk is very clearly referring to tumas haguf. So too, Pasuk Chof, which also begins with v'hanefesh asher tochal, the person, and it closes with v'nichrso ha'nefesh ahi me'amel, also closes with a reference to the person, and in the middle, the expression of a tumaso alav was in the masculine, but it too, when it says alav, it refers to on him, the person. Now, the Gemara goes on to describe the other point that Rava mentioned. That was the point we included in brackets. Let's just reread that line. We didn't read it in its complete form before. Starting back from Rava, where there's a little aleph. Omar Rava, kol kro delo miforish le rav yitzchak bar avudimi, v'chol masnisa delo mifrisha leo ziiri lo mifrisha. And any Tanaic source that's not explained by Zeiri remains unclear. Now, what is Rava referring to? What Tanaic source is unclear that requires Zeiri's intervention? So that will be featured now in this long bracketed section. By the way, we've dashed underlined the names that Rava was referring to. We already saw Rav Yitzchak Bar Avudimi's name dashed underlined. Zeiri will appear on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, three lines from the top at the end of the line. So we have now the source that we said is unclear, Masnisa Desanya. Now this source is talking about the consumption of korbanos, eating of korbanos, while in a state of tumas haguf. On the outside margin, we have under our no say heading, Brisa stuma beinyan tuma, an unclear brisa regarding tuma, bekesher lidvorim shel kedusha, regarding items that are holy, which include sacrifices and truma and miser, things like that. The averas lav umisa, and we'll talk about offenses regarding tuma, either mere negative offenses, lo sases, or offenses that carry with it a death penalty, at the hands of heaven. It's called Miso Bidei Shemayim. Ulekamon Mem Dalam Ad Aleph, Ziri Yazbiroso. Ziri will explain that this source, which is currently, which we haven't even read yet, but which will appear a bit unclear. In our markings, as you glance ahead in the Gemara, you see the Tanaic sources in a frame, and then you'll see house forms that appear. We have under our Mivneh heading, Shlovim, stages, V'hasbir Bameh Medubar Mahim Kalos V'chamuros. What are the Kalos? These are terms that we haven't seen yet, but they're in the Tanaic source. Kalos meaning the light level things, and Chamuros, the severe level things. Turning now to the Gemara. Masnisa Desanya. Masnisa is a reference to that which we saw in the diamond just two lines above, where Rava said a source that remains unexplained, that's not explained by Zeiri. So the source that Rava was referring to is as follows. Bearing in mind that the source is unclear, it has terms that need definition. And right after the source, you can see the Gemara asks, my kalos umay chamuros. That's if you skip to the section of the Gemara right after the frame, you'll see that the Gemara is preoccupied with explaining the terms that are unclear. So for our purposes, we read the source without explanation. The source says, im nemru kalos, lomo nemru chamuros. If the Torah teaches us regarding the light level things, then why does it have to teach me about the severe things? V'im ne'mar chamuros, lomo ne'mar kalos. And if it teaches me about the severe things, so why does it have to teach me about the light level things? Im ne'mar kalos, v'lo chamuros. If it would teach me the light ones and not the severe ones. So notice with the marking, what we try to do is bring out or emphasize certain phrases that have a balancing effect. So here we have Innemar Kalos Vulchamus, and if you look at the next line, it says the opposite, the Innemar Hamuros Velo Namru Kalos. We've also dashed underlined the expression Hoyisi Omer. This emphasis will have significance as we go on in the Gemara. But nevertheless, it goes on to say, and if the Torah taught regarding Kalos and not taught regarding the severe things, Hoyisi Omer, I would have thought. Now this expression is very important. It's saying I would have thought, but now that something has been taught, I won't say this. So what is the I would have thought? Hoyisi Omer, I would have thought, al hakalos belav, ve'al hachamuros b'misa. That for the light things, there's only a negative offense, but for the heavy things, there is a more severe penalty, namely, misa b'deishim, and death at the hands of heaven. L'kach ne'mar chamuros. Therefore, the Torah teaches me chamuros, which, therefore, would not carry with it misa. It would also carry with it the simple lav offense, the offense of having violated a negative command, which in general carries with it a penalty of lashing as opposed to the severe penalty. So what have we said over here? We said that it's necessary for the Torah to teach me about the chamuros, because if I would have taught only regarding the kalos, then regarding the chamuros, I would have thought there is a death penalty. Now that I have been taught whatever I've been taught, it does not have the death penalty. Ve'im ne'emar chamuros v'lo ne'emru kalos, and had the Torah taught me only regarding the severe and not regarding the light, ho yesi omar, I would have thought, ala chamuros yeh chayov v'al ha'kalos yeh poter, that only for the severe thing would there be a violation, and for the light thing there would be innocence. Lekach ne'emar kalos, therefore the Torah teaches me about the kalos to convey that there's also guilt with regard to them. Don't worry, we don't really understand anything we've learned. We've seen a certain type of Tanaic structure, but nothing conclusive yet, because the key elements have not been explained. My kalos umay chamuros. What is meant by the term kalos and the term chamuros? We're beginning a long question, in other words, a question of clarification. The Gemara will go through several stages, as we saw the house marking, and in our note we mentioned these are stages in attempting to clarify what do these things mean. When we get to the third line from the top of Daf Mem Dalid, at that point Ziri will reveal to us the correct understanding of things. So as we go on, we read Ilemo. Kalois equals miser. Chamurois equals truma. We're trying to explain these vague expressions in the source. Kalos maybe refers to eating miser sheni while tome. And chamuros is a reference to truma. So if you plug those expressions into the source, you're going to come out with an inaccuracy. Therefore, it's not going to be sufficient for us to use Meiser and Truma as the explanation of the terms Kalos and Chamuros, respectively. Why? So, in the source, we saw the expression Hoyisi Omer, that without something being taught, I would have thought one thing, but in actuality, it's something else. So if you plug in, let's take truma in, into the case of chamuros. What is the source teaching me? That had the Torah taught regarding kalos, regarding maiser sheni, one eating it while tome, and not taught regarding chamuros, truma, eating it while tome, where a person who is tome eats truma, I would have thought that for eating truma while tome, there would be a misa b'dei shamayim, but in truth, there is not. That's not accurate. In fact, right now as well, that is the case. So let's read that inside. Hoyisi omer b'misa. I would have thought that truma, one eating truma, which we're explaining is chamuros, while tome, I would have thought is b'misa. Hashtonami ha b'misa. But now, in fact, it is b'misa, that one who, while tome, eats truma, is chayav misa b'dei shamayim. So, that's one objection. Number two, a second objection. V'su, and furthermore, the iloi ne'emar, if it had not stated misa b'chamuros, ho yisi omer b'misa, I would have thought, through logic, that it should be b'misa? That's not logical, because when applying logic, in certainly Torah logic, there's a concept known as dayo, and that's what the Gemara says, dayo labo min adin lios kanidon, that something that is derived through a kal v'chomer, The derivative information cannot be any more extreme, if it's in the severe direction, it can't be any more severe, or if we're going in a lenient direction, it can't be any more lenient than the source. So in this case, the source itself said, had it taught me about kalos and not taught me about chamurus, I would have thought that for the kalos, there is a lav violation. A lav is a negative command without and with a penalty of mere malkos, of lashing as opposed to death. It would have been inaccurate to say that on my own, I would have extrapolated from kalos, which carries with it a lav, to chamuros to have something more severe. That's not acceptable. That's not acceptable logic, because as we just mentioned, we apply a concept of dayo labo min adin, namely, it is sufficient for that which is derived through a kal vachomer, klios kanidon, that the derivative can be no more severe than the origin. Therefore, to insert the terms meiser and truma as explaining the expressions kalos and chamuros, we see how much inaccuracy that would entail. Viela, let's try this out. We're going to now approach the words kalos and chamuros is not referring to the item being eaten, but the level of tuma that the person eating it has absorbed. So let's try it out. Elo, kalos equals tumas sheretz. Chamuros equals tumas meis. But then the question is, what is he eating? Uvemai. E betruma. If you're talking about someone eating truma, well, edi v'edi, hu b'misa. Eating truma, whether it's tumas sheretz or mace, or tumas mace, the person is tome. And either way, it carries with it, if eating truma, it carries with it a penalty of misa v'dei shamayim. Not like the source says that there is a differentiation made. B'su. And furthermore, to insert or to define kalos and chamuros, you're going to run into another problem. To define kalos and chamuros as sheretz and tumas meis, this is a quote from above, lekach nemru chamuros, which the result of that would have been dibalav. Therefore, the source, according to what the source says, the Torah teaches me about chamuros, to tell me, not like I would have thought that it would have been b'misa, but it's belav. But that's not true. If you're talking about chamuros being tumas meis, and you're talking about the eating of truma, ha b'misa hi, it doesn't carry with it a lav penalty, it carries with it a death penalty, death b'dei shamayim. V'i b'achilas meiser, and if you'll say, listen, let us continue to define kalos and chamuros as tumas sheretz and tumas meis respectively, and instead of eating truma maybe, the source is talking about he's eating meiser. So let's see if that holds up. This is a quote from the source. Imlo namru chamurois. Had it not taught me about chamurois, hoyisi oimer al hachamurois b'misa. I would have thought that for the chamuros, there would have been b'misa. What is that? What are we in effect saying? Plugging in the current information. So we're talking about the eating of Meiser Sheni. And we're saying, had the Torah not taught about Chamuros, namely Tumas Meis, I would have thought concerning the Chamuros. That means, I would have thought concerning Tumas Meis, while one is eating Meiser Sheni, that it would have carried with it a penalty of Miso B'dei Shamayim. Hey, I never would have thought that. The whole din of eating meiser betuma, that there is a problem of eating meiser sheni while tome, that itself is derived from the halachas of tumas sheretz. Ha mitumas sheretz koasya. The prohibition of eating meiser sheni while tome, tumas meis, that itself is derived from tumas sheretz. Now, what's the halacha of eating Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Sheretz? That carries with it a lav penalty, a negative offense without any death penalty attached to it. V'dayo labo min adin lios kanidon. And that which is derived, namely, eating Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Meis, that's derived information derived from eating Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Sheretz. And if eating Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Sheretz carries with it a mere lav offense, I never would have thought that it would have, that eating the Meiser Sheni Betumas Mace would have carried with it a Misa penalty. That once again, that's a function of Dayo Labo Min Adin Lios Kanidon, that that which is derived, in this case the consumption of Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Aguf, is derived from eating Meiser Sheni while Tomei Tumas Sheretz, which carries with it only a Lav penalty. Therefore, we've seemingly all exhausted all the different possibilities. We have the terms kalos and chamuros. We try to define that as either referring to the food item, i.e. meiser or truma. We tried explaining kalos and chamuros referring to the tuma level, and we have come up with no solution. Omar Ziri, and as Rova promised, you need to have Ziri to come and explain those unclear Tanaic sources, and we have one of them on hand. Ziri says, kalos equals tumas sheretz, chamuros equals tumas meis. So far, it sounds like the most recent attempt. However, v'hochi ko'omar, thusly, one is to understand the source. Ilu ne'mar tumas sheretz, v'ne'mar meiser utrumo. Had the Torah taught us about tumas sheretz with regard to meiser and truma, voloi nemro tumas meis, and remained silent with regard to tumas meis, hoyisi oimer, I would have thought, kalois al hakalois belav. That's a reference to tumas sheretz, one who is tomei tumas sheretz while eating meiser sheni, that is a lav violation. V'kalois al hachamurois b'misa. That's a reference to tumas sheretz with regard to eating truma. That, the Torah tells us, is b'misa. Umide kalois ala chamuros equals b'misa. This is, and from the fact that for tumas sheretz, that one who is tomei tumas sheretz and eats truma in that state, notice in this equation we have one side kal and one side chomor. So by virtue of the fact that in such an equation we see the misa penalty punishment resulting, I would have thought on my own the following, chamurois al hakalois nami b'misa, that if one were tomei tumas meis, and he eats, while tomei tumas meis, he eats meiser sheni, he would also be b'misa. Lekach nemru chamuros. Therefore, it was necessary for the Torah to tell us, to spell out the halochas of tumas meis with regard to meiser sheni, namely, that if one is tomei meis while eating meiser sheni, he is only guilty of a lav, and not misa. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.